Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Charlene, and I am a shaman. And one of the things that I am really advocating for as a change in our world is equality between men and women, specifically the need that women have to be more confident, have more self-esteem, and become more assertive in our world so they can get ahead in life. I don't feel that men actively seek to keep us down. As much as they used to. But we still have an issue where the attributes that we need to get ahead in life are primarily masculine attributes, and our inherent femininity and what our culture teaches us keeps us from, embodying that confidence, that assertiveness, and being able to fully express ourselves in a way that communicates to other people that we know what we're doing. So I wanted to open up this call. I was on Twitter last night and Buffer posted this article on body language. And I thought this I read it and this is perfect. This is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. So in the article, they talk about how you can use your body language to communicate a more confident demeanor and win people over more than just facial expressions. And so one of the things they talk about in this article poses. And power poses, not only do they communicate more confidence and assertiveness and surety, but they also stimulate the production of testosterone in your body. Now, most people already know that testosterone is the primary male hormone. Doesn't mean only men have it. Women have testosterone too. But our primary hormone that makes us feminine is estrogen. So, and men have estrogen too. Of course, it's just a matter of what that balance is in your body. So, the power poses in this article stimulate testosterone production in your body, which takes about 2 minutes for it to then process into you feeling more elated, more confident, and more assertive in yourself. Now, I'm looking at the first power pose that they have on here, and it is a man, a picture of a man sitting in an office chair. He's reclining, he's leaning back, and he's got his hands behind his head, and his legs are crossed in front. And I remember seeing my dad when I was growing up sitting in this posture quite frequently. This is a posture I really associate with my dad. My dad is a wonderful salesman and he's a very confident and assertive gentleman. But this is not a position I remember seeing any women in, like ever. And so that's a very masculine position to be in. Now, the low power poses are very feminine. Legs crossed at the knees, arms resting in front of you on the table, crossed. Those positions tend to stimulate the cortisol production in your body, which is related to stress. So I thought that was very interesting to begin with. And then another thing that they said would increase your confidence and help win people over is to sit side to side with someone or stand side to side, not facing each other, instead of facing each other and talking. And in my gender studies class, I learned that women, when they're communicating with each other, like to face each other. They want their faces facing each other, and that's how we show that we're communicating and listening to someone. Men like to sit or stand side to side. They like to look straight ahead and have their bodies in alignment facing the same direction. So again, this article is suggesting that instead of our typical feminine way of communicating, that we should instead adopt a more masculine method of communicating, which is to align our bodies side to side and face away from the person we're communicating with. The last thing they suggest on here, tip number five, is lowering your voice with deep breathing. Because, and it says that men and women with deeper voices are more likely to land in a leadership position and are generally perceived as a greater authority. Lower pitched voices are associated with greater testosterone production. So, again, we're seeing how in studies they're showing that people with lower and deeper voices are more likely to be considered an authority figure or a leader and get promotions and stuff than people with higher, more feminine voices. So, just using this article that I found last night on Twitter, and I only looked at like the last 2 hours of what had been posted. There's already an example of how our culture is geared to favor men in leadership positions than women. And so that is it blew my mind when I read it. I just wanted to like print it out and wave it around from on top of my roof and like scream out to the world like, no, we are women. We don't do these things. And so I really feel that there needs to be a change in our workforce to favor and accept our feminine method of communication. Now, let's go back to the beginning. What happens to women when they're younger that makes them feel more meek and submissive and causes them not to speak up, not to be assertive, and to lack confidence? Well, for one, it's the way that boys and girls are treated growing up. A study done, I read this study probably a couple years ago now at this point. There was a study done that shows that in classes, teachers are more likely to call on boys to answer questions that have to do with math, science, and technology, and more likely to call on girls when it comes to English and art. But so we have that STEM separation. STEM is the science, technology, something else. It's the segment of our workforce that is considered more masculine is science, technology, and stuff like that, engineering and math, I believe. Science, technology, engineering, math, yes. So that is considered traditionally masculine. And arts and English and stuff like that are considered traditionally feminine. And so already we have this division happening in our elementary schools where the teachers are favoring the boys for those STEM subjects and the girls for the soft subjects, soft in quotes. Now, when teachers call on students with boys, if they get the answer wrong in class, the teacher is more likely to encourage them to try again. Like with a math problem, if they get it wrong, they'll say, oh, remember such and such, why don't you try that again? With girls, if they get a question wrong, they're more likely to move on to another student. So what we're doing is we're teaching boys that it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to take a risk, put yourself out there, and mess up because you're going to get another chance. It's not the end of the world. With girls, we're teaching them that if they get an answer wrong, if they put themselves out there, they risk rejection. They risk proving that they're not good enough and that we're going to move on to the next person. So that is an example of how our culture automatically starts creating this division between boys and girls in the way that they're treated. That's an example in school. Now let's talk about the media, because the most recent studies show that children and teens consume, preteens and teens consume 10 hours of media every day. There's only 24 hours in a day. And theoretically, 8 of those they spend sleeping. So that only leaves 16 hours left. That means there are only 6 hours in the day when they are not consuming some form of media. Now, media includes TV, movies, music, internet, and social media. So we're covering all those bases 10 hours a day. Which, is crazy because, like 8 hours they're in school, so they must be, it's just an average per day, so it works out on the weekend they actually do quite a bit more than 10 hours. So I'm sure some of you have noticed that in the media, women and men are portrayed very differently. Women are completely objectified. All the heroines in our movies and TV shows and everything are beautiful. They're probably also white because diversity is a major issue as well. So there are a couple where you have more minority races in there, but they're considered more unique or quirky or niche shows than the mainstream shows you see on TV. So our heroines are beautiful. Most of them are in pursuit of men or have men issues, or perhaps their mothers whose life revolves around their families. They are rarely working women, and if they are working women, they're treated very as if they were a cute novelty. They are talked down to, and we rarely see the strong women characters. Now, when we do, I'm not saying there aren't any TV series that do that, because we do have TV series that do that, where we have a strong female leader, but they tend to get canceled after a season. People don't support that show. I can't remember what show it was now. But there was a TV show on like HBO or something that came out, and it had, I believe it was Gina Davis as the President of the United States. And it was a TV series about her. I don't remember what the name of the series was, but it was canceled after a season. So we're not supporting those shows that show strong female leads. Now, I know in my age category, I am 35. And in my age range, people are watching less TV and they're watching more Netflix, but their consumption of social media and the internet is huge. And what do we see on the internet all the time? We're seeing stuff about, oh, I know one that stuck out to me. I saw this a couple days ago. It was how you shouldn't wear flip-flops if your feet look like they could snatch up your prey. And oh my gosh, a friend of mine posted this, and she had so many comments where people were ragging on people about their horrible feet conditions. Now, to me, this was obviously geared towards women, because men don't care if you think their feet can snatch up their prey or whatever. So we have these posts that are demeaning, like you can't wear something if your body isn't correct. We get those messages all the time. You can't wear a bikini if you don't have a bikini body. It's January, so I'm sure everyone has received like a million T messages about how you need to lose weight and get in shape. In March, we'll start getting messages about bikini bodies and summer dresses and how we need to be able to fit in those. There's kind of a little battle going on right now between the whole like, have you seen those memes where it's when did this body become more attractive than this body? And the first bodies they show are the really skinny actresses and models that have like ribs showing and their hip bones sticking out. And then the second set of bodies that is supposed to be the sexier ones are like Marilyn Monroe and the more voluptuous models and things like that. So there's posts like that going around where people are trying to gain acceptance for larger, non-perfect bodies, but instead of being embracing all bodies, we have to tear down those women who are skinny in order to elevate women who are not, who are more of an average size. So that's the kind of tactics we are taught to use when it comes to other women. We are taught that we are our value is based on how we compare to other women. Are we June Cleaver? Are we sexy? Are we smart? Are we resourceful? Are we beautiful? And if we're the other things, we better be beautiful because it's not going to get noticed. I mean, everyone's just kind of focused on your weight and your looks. So in music, we are, again, another example of tearing down other women to elevate ourselves. That song, All About That Bass, just came out. And in the lyrics, she says something about she isn't some skinny girl. She's got some thickness going on. And I forget what the lyric is exactly, but it's pretty demeaning to skinny girls, and it's not fair to them. I mean, especially I have two beautiful, gorgeous, stunning women that I dance with who are naturally very thin, and those kind of lyrics are cruel to them. It's just as bad as saying no fat chicks. Are you gonna go with no skinny chicks? I mean, we're tearing other. There's no reason. She could say that she is all about that bass and she has the thickness and she knows how to shake her booty and all that stuff. She can say that without having a lyric in there tearing down skinny girls. So that is what gets in our brain and what gets taught to us. And in music, women are horribly, horribly objectified. We're just notches on a belt. We're the sum of our body parts. Do we have perfect boobs? Do we have a perfect butt? Do we have perfect thighs? How's our stomach? How's our face? What's our hair look like? We're just completely dissembled and reassembled into the perfect woman over and over and over again. And, there's not a lot of songs out there about smart girls or, oh my God, she fixed my computer. We don't have that kind of music that we're rocking out to. It's, all about going to the club and putting makeup on and seeing how many guys you can dance with and get dirty with on the dance floor and things like that. I'm sure you've noticed in movies, women are never the smart, quirky main character unless it's a romance where our character is trying to find a man to marry. So that's, and those are chick flicks. So apparently our priorities are all about finding men and being happily ever after and taken care of for the rest of our lives. And even those women, even though they dress a little more modestly, there's always that scene where she gets the pow outfit on, where she's in lingerie or a fancy dress or whatever, and suddenly it's revealed that she is a great beauty. So even in those movies, we're being objectified. Our character is gorgeous, regardless of how we've been presenting her so far. There's a secret beauty hidden under that frumpiness, and so we are taught that we are objects. And the biggest issue with young girls' self-esteem right now is self-objectification. And self-objectification is where they are viewing themselves as objects. They can no longer see their own personhood. Instead, they're seeing themselves as something that is a conquest, a trophy, a prize, a notch on the belt. And, it's ridiculous. There, the number of girls who want to become the next president of the United States, the percentage of them in elementary school has now dropped. In first and second grade, there's about 13, I believe the number was 13% of girls in the first or second grade want to be president of the United States. It's somewhere on their list. By the time they get into sixth, fifth and sixth grade, that number has dropped to 3%. When they get into high school, it's almost non-existent. So as girls are growing up, they believe that they can become great leaders less and less and less. And those numbers are a lower percentage than they were a decade ago. So somehow in the last 10 years, we have backslid. 2010 was the first year that we did not increase the number of women in Congress since 1979. So we're the women who are willing to step up into those leadership positions is dwindling as well. It's absurd. There are Those of you who follow me on Facebook saw this statistic already. There are 67 countries who have had women prime ministers or presidents, and the United States is not one of them. It's absurd. In most countries, the legislative committees, whatever their equivalent is to our Congress, has upwards of 30% women. We have right about 15% is women. And women make up 53% of our population. So our legislative branch does not reflect our population and its interests appropriately. Women's needs, rights, and experiences are not being accessed by our legislative branches, and that is a shame. It's a real, real shame. And we're not teaching our daughters, like I said with the math and English examples earlier, we're not teaching them that they can go into the hard sciences and the leadership positions that we're teaching our boys that they can. Now, I'm not, again, I'm not, this is not men versus women. I'm solely speaking about the women's experience here. Men have a lot of advantages over women, but they also have a lot of disadvantages too. And those are addressed by other people. I focus on the women's experience personally. So that is something that we really need to work on. Now, the women's experience when they do go into those fields, into the tech fields, I want to tell you, Google has about 20% of Google's employees are women. And only 17% in their tech positions. So Google is, they're touted for their diversity and their common men and, hiring a diverse workplace and stuff. And that's how dismally they do with hiring women. And part of the issue is that women will go into those entry-level positions in the sciences and technology and math fields, but they don't progress through the ranks. And part of the issue is what I opened up this conversation with was the communication styles and the confidence and self-assuredness and assertiveness that women need in order to get ahead. We just don't have that reflection in our behavior, either because we don't have self-esteem and we don't have self-confidence or assertiveness, or because our femininity is not perceived as being confident and leadership-like. We're not seen as authorities. So a lot of women drop out of the sciences and they go into marketing or advertising, or they go into teaching positions or things like that instead, because they're able to be recognized and advanced better than they can in their science and technology fields. And on top of that, the overt, not even covert, but overt sexism of those fields pushes women out. They're harassed, they're sexually harassed, maybe not for sexual favors and things like that, but they're harassed based on their sex, their gender. And so they're treated like little girls. They're talked down to. They're not given the projects. People don't take them seriously. People have to go consult with somebody else before they can follow up on someone's idea instead of just giving them a chance. Women are just seen as treated as if they are little kids in an adult situation. And that's a real shame. And so a lot of women are leaving those fields because they're just not getting the respect that they deserve and they're not getting the promotions that they want. And that's a real shame. So we're with women not being willing to go into those fields and not getting the promotions and stuff, we're not getting the role models that our younger girls need to see in order to pursue those goals themselves. It's a real shame. But so we're not just here to complain about the world and how we're set up to fail. We're here to change the world. So let's talk about self-esteem and self-confidence. Self-confidence has to come from within. We are taught as women that the only value that we have is how we rank with other women. We cannot be good in a vacuum. We can only be good as we are compared to other people. We need to stop that. Comparison is one of the biggest issues that women have. We're always comparing our success to others. We're always comparing our beauty to others. We're comparing our intelligence to others. We're comparing our accomplishments to others. Can I be as good as my sister? Can I be as good as my brother? Can I be as good as my cousin? What about my best friend? Am I as good as her? Am I as happy as her? Are my kids as happy as her kids are? We're always doing this comparison thing, and we need to stop. You need to place value on yourself for the things that you do. You need to value those things. So you need to stop comparing. You are beautiful. You are smart. You are intelligent. You do have value. Think about the things that you accomplish on your own. So let's say you take a quiz. We're going to use one of those awful quizzes on Facebook as an example. I hate those so much. Because they automatically encourage you to do the comparison thing by sharing your results with your friends, right? So you take an intelligence quiz on Facebook. How many British phrases do you recognize? Well, you take the quiz and you get 8 out of 10 correct. 8 out of 10 is a B score in school. So we're going to use that objective scale as a measure. So 8 out of 10 is pretty good, right? Take that and leave that there. That's all you need to know. I did really good on this quiz. Not like super awesome. I didn't get an A, but I did really good. If all your friends get 9 out of 10 and 10 out of 10, you then turn around and feel bad for yourself, and we need to stop that. You still did really good. You need to be proud of that. Same thing with like your SAT scores and your college exams and things like that. You get graded on those things objectively, and you need to value what you do, they're abstract and objective forms of scoring, so they're not perfect. But you got to give yourself credit for what you've accomplished instead of comparing yourself, going, taking your score, finding out what everybody else got, and then ranking yourself among them. Look at your accomplishments and the things that you've done. I mean, we need to give ourselves credit for all sorts of things. If you got up this morning and you're on the call, you did awesome. I mean, it's Saturday. You could have just stayed in bed all day, but instead you got up and you came to this call. That's pretty good. If you got out of your pajamas, you get bonus points. I did not. I am doing this call in my pajamas, I am proud to say. And but you do need to give yourself credit for those things that you value. I really encourage people to make a list, sit down and prioritize the things in their life. What's really important that they want to accomplish? What values do they want to have? And what attributes do they want to embody? Prioritize all those things. And then instead of comparing your accomplishments to somebody else, think about how well you reflect your priorities and how well you're following through on them. Do this as a standalone thing. Everybody else has different sets of priorities and stuff, so you can't compare yourself to them. I mean, you can't compare like how well you're aging with your friend Janet, how happy your kids are compared to Mary's kids, how beautiful your artwork is compared to Samantha's artwork, how fit you are compared to Charlotte. You can't do that. That's horrible. You're taking the best single attribute from everyone around you, and you're trying to compete with them in all areas of your life. That is not doable. So you need to take an objective stance, and the only person you should be competing with is yourself. So make that list of priorities and quit comparing yourself to others, and just do your best to live your life in the way that you have determined is important. Now, another way that we learn to be more of assertive is looking out for ourselves. Learning to say no. Learning to say no is really, really hard. But if you learn to say no, you will then have time and energy for those priorities that you determine that you have. You can't be all things to everyone. You shouldn't always say no. One of the first things that people think of when you say no is who they're going to ask next. They're not thinking that you're a bad person. They're not thinking that you've abandoned them. They're not thinking that you've betrayed them. They're just thinking that you said no and they need to go ask someone else. That's their priority in the moment. So learning to say no is really important, and it actually contributes to our self-confidence and our self-esteem. Because we're not trying to do everything. We're recognizing that our time is important and we have other priorities, and we're then able to give more time to the people we feel really need it. So instead of doing a favor for Charlotte and her fitness quest, we are going to spend more time with our children. And because we're doing something that we feel is important, it reflects our internal values. We're going to feel better about ourselves. So learning to say no is hugely important, but you don't have to do it all at once, okay? Take small steps. Say no to small things. Challenge yourself. Maybe say no to every third request that is made for you, or say no to really minor things at first, and then increase your no frequency. You want to get to a point where you're really only doing the things that are important to you. And then, for instance, for me, people ask me to help them with their projects all the time, and I'm having to say no to them. But a lot of times on Sundays, I'll end up with extra time, and then I'll just say yes to anyone who asks. So if I have time on Sunday, I say yes to people or I volunteer to help people. But if it's another day, if I don't have the time, I just say no. I say, no, I can't do it. Now, the thing that I almost just said that we also need to watch out for is the apology. I'm sorry. Because we honestly feel guilty when we're saying no to people. And that's why we say, I'm sorry. And you should not feel guilty because people say no to other people all the time. Men have this down. They can say no to each other. They, no, nobody, I'm too busy. And they don't have to go into it. They don't apologize. They just leave it at that. The other guy goes, all right, man, I get it. I'll ask so and so instead. And that they're cool with each other. So we need to learn to say no as well. That will increase our self-esteem and our self-confidence, and it'll teach us to be a little bit more assertive. Plus, we'll start establishing some boundaries, and boundaries are hugely important because we have a tendency to let people take advantage of us. And once we establish, I'm sure you guys have heard about boundaries just way too much, so I'm not going to belabor that point, but start practicing saying no. Also, know that women, when we're growing up, we tend to do what some scientists are starting to call losing our voice. And that is reflected earlier when I talked about how when girls get questions wrong, the teacher moves on to another student instead of giving them another chance. Well, that causes us to lose our voice. We start speaking up less and less. So, another way to increase your self-confidence and assertiveness, and this is going to be really uncomfortable at first, but it's something to work on. You need to start speaking up, voicing your opinions, giving people your ideas, saying what you think, just speaking up in general. You need to be willing to put yourself out there and take small risks. Now, just like with the saying no thing, you can start really small. If you want to work up to voicing your proposal for a project, you can start small with voicing what you would like to have for lunch. When we're asked, what do you want to have for lunch? We always go, I don't know. What do you feel like, right? So instead of doing that, actually say what you would like for lunch. I feel like grilled cheese with lobster. Let's go have it. You're not going to offend anyone by stating your opinion. If they don't agree with you, they'll just go, nah, I don't feel like that. Let's do this instead, or let's do something else, or whatever. People are not offended by you speaking your opinion. So you need to speak up more often. Now, when it comes to politics and religion, people do get offended over you speaking your opinion. But it's important that you not take that personally, because just because someone disagrees with you on something doesn't mean they hate you, they resent you, they feel betrayed or feel abandoned or any of that other stuff. You have done them no offense. You haven't done something mean to them. You're not going to make them cry. You don't need to feel guilty. It's okay for you to state your opinions. And again, if you have a hard time with this, start small. I like the color red. I like red things. I'm going to have a red thing. Start small, work your way up until you're finally pitching those ideas for the projects. You're speaking up, you're amending things, you're pointing out errors instead of having to chase, just chase around errors that are happening, fixing other people's work. And doing projects that you don't agree with and things like that. Get to a point where you're speaking up and you're saying your ideas and you're confident, and people will start listening to you. It'll be amazing. They'll actually come to you for your opinion. It's a really great feeling. And so you need to get to that point where you're being assertive and you're speaking up. All right, let's talk about physical appearance. You need to have a physical appearance that makes you feel good. That's it. You don't need to be in a sexy bikini body. You don't have to be the hot secretary. You don't have to do any of that stuff. You just need to feel good in your body. Now, if that means that you eat healthy and you exercise and you maintain a certain weight, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with wanting to look good and feel good. If that means that you relax and you quit punishing yourself at the gym 4 times a week, I did that. I did 4 times a week. One of those days, I would be there for 6 hours. It was ridiculous. And, I starved myself 1,200 calories a day for months just trying to lose weight so I would look better. And it turns out I had a thyroid issue. Go figure. But anyways, you need to feel and look good in your body. I'm a little heavier, but I dance 4 or 5 times a week. I'm incredibly fit. I have almost completely recovered from a back injury and a knee injury. I'm doing fantastic. My body feels great. I'm not the picture perfect movie star or actress appearance, but I'm pretty happy with the way I look, and I feel really good in my body. That's what you want to achieve. You want to feel good. If that means that you go running every day, then run every day. If that means you take a half hour bath in the evenings with a little lavender oil and some candles, do that. If that means you use the special lotion on your body, do that. If you have that really loud patterned sweatshirt that you just love and makes you feel great, but people tend to be like, what are you wearing? Wear it anyways. The important part is that you feel amazing in your body and that you like the way you look and you like the way you feel. So really prioritize those feelings over how other people see you. This will build your confidence, this will build your assertiveness, and this will build your self-esteem. You have to appreciate how you feel. It's your body. You're the only one living in it. So you have to be happy with it. Other people will just have to accept what you do with your body, and that's the way it is. And you got to stand up and really, really do the things that make you feel good. I really recommend that everyone take some time and make a list, a nice long list of all the positive attributes you have. Now, this might be a real challenge for you, and I don't want you to do the comparison thing again. We're going to avoid the comparison thing, but just make a list of all the things you like about you. If you have to, this can be a huge challenge for some people. If you have to, start small. I like my hair. I like how long my hair is. I like the color of my hair. Whatever little thing you need to start with. I can do crossword puzzles. I'm good at crossword puzzles. I like that about myself. Write those things down. Every little thing. I'm a good driver. You know, how often do we give ourselves credit for being a good driver? Give yourself credit for that. And then get bigger and bigger. I'm smart. I'm intelligent. I'm resourceful. I'm creative. I'm an artist. Like, really build up to those nice big things. Try to make a list of these good attributes you have that's at least 20 items long. And put it somewhere you can see it every day. Not only see it, but access it. So when you come up with something else that you're good at, you can add it to the list. Keep building the list more and more and more and review it frequently. This will help build assertiveness. Now, in the workplace, it's very important that you learn to be assertive and speak up. Part of that is not apologizing for things. We spoke about that already. Women have a huge habit. It's just a phrase we put in there to be inoffensive. And you have to stop being afraid of being offensive. You're not offensive. So you don't have to say, I'm sorry, I was just thinking that, or I'm sorry to bother you, but I need you to do this. That happens to be your job. We do that all the time. Just leave off, I'm sorry. And that alone will start establishing you as more of an authority figure in your workplace. Now, before I end this call, I want to open up the line to questions. Let me unmute everybody. Do, do, do. All right, all callers are unmuted. Do any of you have any questions? Ooh, an uncomfortable silence. Okay, that's all right. I'm going to go ahead and wrap up the call then. I just want to say that I do have a program where we could go more in depth and speak to your specific issues if you're interested. It's on my website at www.charleneslimp.com, and it's called the Empowering Woman Journey. And that is where I do some coaching with you to increase your self-esteem and your self-confidence and your assertiveness, where we dig into those that programming that's in your brain from experiences that are in your past or from what people have told you or just the experiences that you've observed over life. We dig those out and we replace them with new programming and we do some activities to increase your self-confidence. One thing that I want to leave you with, and this is the kind of exercise I give my clients to go to practice to help increase their assertiveness. We tend to, this has to do, this is a little energy work, but it works for people who don't follow that as well. We tend to keep our heads tilted downward, our face tilted towards the floor. Okay? And what I want you to try doing is I want you to try to keep your head so that your chin is parallel to the floor. This might turn in a result in a slight turn upward towards the sky with your face, but for most of you it'll cause you to be perfectly forward facing with your face. I want you to really pay attention to where you hold your face. If it's tilted down, I want you to tilt it up. If you're looking at your computer screens right now, put stuff under your monitors so that you are looking straight ahead at your computer instead of looking down at it. This will stimulate, it actually stimulates dopamine receptors in your brain so that you feel good and you feel better about yourself. So that is one small exercise that actually, and doing this will open your throat chakra, which allows you to speak up more often. So try just a small exercise of lifting your chin up, angling your face more upward, and going through your conversations, your work day, your at home time, your relaxation. When you're reading, hold your books up higher or lay in such a way that you are not looking down into your book. Just try it out and see how it works for you. So I'm going to go ahead and end the call here. If you have any questions, feel free to email me. You can email me at charlene@charleneslimp.com. It's a real easy email address. Or contact me through the contact form on my website. And go out there and kick some ass, ladies. Let's do this thing, all right? We got to change the world so our daughters have a better one to live in than we had growing up. So let's do this. Thank you so much. Take care. Bye.